Eddie, the Collegiate Sophomore. Chapter 7. Spring Semester, Part 3. On the Monday morning following the divisional meet, Mr. Fraser begins addressing his team, telling them, "Good morning. They said no one can run a mile faster than 4 minutes." "Yeah, right. And now that we have a lot of your problems of self-doubt taken care of, you men and women are truly the greatest. You've put in the work, you competed, and you have the medals to prove you are the greatest." Mr. Fraser then asks, "Do you finally believe me?" The team all cheers, "Yes." Mr. Fraser continues, "I understand that what you accomplished during the divisional meet is unprecedented. Each one of you is to be congratulated for your fine performance during the meet this past weekend." Revisiting the successes of the divisional meet, Mr. Fraser announces who medaled in which event, emphasizing over and over again that the university's team won all the gold medals. Mr. Fraser then tells the team, "Now, for the news you won't hear from anyone but me." Raising his voice, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Don't think for a split second that the other teams will be sitting on their ass all summer long. After the divisional meet, they are all going to be training harder and smarter. What do you think their coaches are telling them right now? I can tell you this. It ain't a pretty sight. The other teams are hearing how badly they got their ass kicked. 4 of the 12 teams went home empty-handed. 7 teams took home a few silver and bronze medals. Not one of the 11 other teams took home a gold medal. So, let me ask you. Do you think the runners on those teams are happy?" "No. Not at all. Many of the athletes you ran against during the divisional meet are on scholarship. Do you seriously think the school they attend is happy with their performance this weekend?" "No. Not at all." Having everyone's attention, including Provost Layton and Dr. Bonamo, Mr. Fraser continues, "And whether you realize it or not, you have scared the crap out of their coaches. Their coaches are afraid of you. Do you think the athletic directors at the other universities are happy with their track coaches' performance?" "No. Not at all. You can be real sure that there is a lot of finger-pointing going on at those schools right now. At some of those other universities, the coaches' jobs are now on the line. They could get fired. And they have you to thank for that." Mr. Fraser chuckles and tells the team, "But that's their problem, not ours." Mr. Fraser then asks the team, "By a show of hands, how many of you prefer winning as opposed to losing?" Everyone on the team raises their hand, including Provost Layton and Dr. Bonamo. Mr. Fraser energetically asks the team, "If I ask the other 11 teams in the division the same question, what do you think their answer will be?" Most of the athletes reply, "Winning," to which Mr. Fraser replies, "Exactly." Raising his voice even more, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "If they are to win, they'll have to put in more work than you do. And be assured, they will all be putting in a lot more work before next January. If you want to keep winning, you'll have to put in more work than they plan to do. You have raised the bar, and they plan to meet it. Next year, if you want to be equally as successful as this year, you will have to raise the bar again." The team claps and cheers, indicating to the coaching staff that they are ready for the challenge. Mr. Fraser then tells the team, "I understand from Mrs. Owens that, at the end of the school year, we all try different events, reevaluating our skill set as a team. We will begin that exercise today. If you are a senior, you deserve a break. I am giving you the day off." The team laughs, knowing that the seniors are done and are not returning next year. Mr. Fraser continues, "So, over the next week, we will all be running time trials in every event. And I expect everyone to give it their best. I will know if you're slacking off. Okay. Let's head outside and start working." Kathy and Paula work with Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton as they arrange time trials for the athletes outside of their regular events. Up first will be the 100-meter dash. As everyone gets lined up, Mr. Fraser announces, you'll all be running the 100-meter dash first. And you heard me correctly. Next year, all of the events will be measured in meters. There are no more yards and miles. In the 100-meter dash, I want 100% effort out of everyone on the distance team. I want to know what your top end is, so I can better know how to improve your performance. While the time trials are underway, Kathy asks Paula, have you heard anything about graduate school yet? Paula replies, no. Not yet. I thought I would have heard something by now. Kathy suggests, maybe we should go see Mr. Rosenberg after practice. If I didn't get accepted, I'm going to start applying for a job as a gym teacher. Paula agrees, telling Kathy, yeah. Let's go and do that after practice. After a busy morning out on the track, Mr. Fraser blows his whistle, signifying the end of practice. Mr. Fraser instructs the seniors that, if they want to, they can join the team tomorrow for practice, if only to watch or hang out. Dismissing the team, everyone heads to the locker rooms. As the team approaches the arena, they see Officer Hayes sitting with Detective Garrison, along with a scrubby-looking tough guy with two bodyguards. The officers, sitting on the bench, leave everyone wondering why they are present today. In the past, when an officer was present during practice, an announcement of trouble was on the horizon. Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton head over to greet the officers as the athletes head to the locker rooms. As he is headed to the locker room, Braden is called aside by Officer Hayes and is asked to join them for a meeting. Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, Braden, and the officers step inside the arena, out of public view. Officer Hayes introduces Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, and Braden to the scrubby-looking undercover officer, who goes by the name of Mac. Mac's two bodyguards, who are also undercover officers, go by the names of Mad Dog and Bad Dog. For security reasons, their real names are never revealed. Officer Hayes explains to the group, pointing to Mac, I had this undercover officer place a bet that the university takes all the gold medals in this past weekend's divisional meet. Officer Hayes further explains, Mac has placed several large bets through agents in the gambling ring in the past. To them, Mac is known as the loser. In the past, the intent was never to win, but to get marked bills into circulation within the gambling organization so we can discover where they end up. Officer Hayes further explains, the bet placed was that the university would win all the gold medals in the divisional meet. Since it was a very large and unusual bet, the agent who took the bet had to make a phone call to get the bet approved and to have the odds calculated. Officer Braden asks, how much was the bet? Officer Hayes replies, the bet was $30,000. We used the money we recovered from the county dump, where the remains of Mr. Crumb's house were discovered. Braden replies, wow. That's a lot of money. Officer Hayes further explains, the odds of the university winning the gold medal in every event were calculated to be 250-1, which was quite a long shot. The amount of the bet that was placed was $30,000, and with those odds, amounts to a $7.5 million payout. They never expected to pay that out, especially with Mac's history of placing large bets and never winning. Mac is here today to collect his money, along with his two bodyguards. Provost Layton comments, I think I'm missing something here. Officer Hayes continues, explaining, you'll understand in a second. We have already arrested the agent who took the bet. Today, we are here to arrest the person who set the odds and approved the bet. That person is Addison Grimsby. We had the phone of the agent tapped ahead of time. Late last week, when the bet was placed, the agent made a phone call to this Addison Grimsby character, right here at the university. Provost Layton exclaims, I fully understand now. Addison Grimsby has a math degree. He's the odds maker. Officer Hayes replies, wow. This character has a math degree. Even I'm learning something today. Provost Layton elaborates, telling the officers, Dean Grimsby has a PhD in mathematics. Provost Layton then reveals, you know, Addison has persistently expressed his disinterest in sports over the years, and has maintained that he doesn't care about sports. Officer Hayes replies, if he gave that impression, it would be to distract any attention that might be given to him. Provost Layton confesses, he certainly had me fooled. Officer Hayes explains, okay. So, here's where I need all of your help, especially you, Provost Layton. We're moving in to arrest this Addison Grimsby character in a few moments. The way this is going down is that Mac and his two bodyguards will escort Grimsby out of the building. They will convince Grimsby to take them to the ringleader, which, under the circumstances we have planned, he will be glad to do. Speaking to Provost Layton, Officer Hayes requests, what I need you to do is make sure that Mac and his two bodyguards make it to Grimsby's office without any interference. How I plan to do that is to get them to your office first, which I understand is right down the hall from Grimsby's. Provost Layton, who always wanted to get rid of Dean Grimsby, replies, I can certainly help with that. Braden asks, is there any way I can help? Officer Hayes replies, certainly. Officer Levi is on duty right now, patrolling the campus. Chief Toledo prefers he continue on patrol, since only one officer is on duty at the moment. So, should Grimsby contact the campus police, we'll gladly allow it. But, we'll need you to show up at his office to take the call. Braden stands tall, and replies, I'm honored to help, sir. Mr. Fraser asks, is there anything I can do to help? Officer Hayes explains, we have this under control. But, I'm sure you'd be glad to watch us take this Grimsby character away. I know what a thorn he's been in your side. Mac will be wearing a wire. We'll be recording his conversation with Dean Grimsby. If you'd like, you can listen in with myself and Officer Braden. Mr. Fraser replies, I might just do that. Officer Hayes continues, we want to get this over with as quickly as possible. Let me ask this. Can everyone be ready to move, say, in 15 or 20 minutes? Provost Layton replies, I certainly can. Braden replies, I can put on my uniform and be ready by then. Officer Hayes, instructing everyone, announces, okay. Provost Layton, head to your office, and when a guy named Mac requests to see you, tell the gatekeepers to let him through. Officer Braden, get dressed, and meet me behind the administration building near the picnic tables. Everyone moves out, ready to take down Dean Grimsby. 20 minutes later, everyone is verified, by radio, to be in position. Mac and his two bodyguards enter the administration building. They go up to the top floor, where Provost Layton's and Dean Grimsby's offices are located. Arriving on the floor reserved for the university's top administrators, Mac tells the secretary, I'm here to see Provost Layton. Can you please let her know? The secretary asks, and what is your name? Mac replies, Mac. The secretary, who was forewarned by Provost Layton that she has an important meeting with someone named Mac, phones Provost Layton, telling her, Mac is here to see you, ma'am. Provost Layton replies, thank you. I'll be right out. Provost Layton walks down the hall and, arriving at the secretary's area, announces, Mac, it's so good to see you again. Please come on back. Mac and his two bodyguards are escorted by Provost Layton to her office. After a short discussion, Mac asks, where exactly is Dean Grimsby's office? Provost Layton replies, it's at the end of the hall, on the left. His name is on the door, which will likely be closed. Foreseeing every possible problem, Mac asks, does he lock his door? Provost Layton replies, honestly, I don't know. Mac then asks, does Officer Braden have a master key? Provost Layton explains, all the officers have master keys to every lock on campus. Mac replies, okay. Good. They are downstairs, right outside. Once they are ready to move in, Provost Layton asks Mac, "Would it be too much trouble if I knock on his door and tell Dean Grimsby that there is someone here to see him?" Mac replies, "That would be no problem at all. In fact, that would really help." Provost Layton suspects this is the last time she'll ever see Dean Grimsby on campus. The provost clearly wants Dean Grimsby to wonder for the rest of his life how she allowed Mac and his two bodyguards to get to his office. Provost Layton knocks on Dean Grimsby's door, who replies, "Come in." Opening the door, Provost Layton announces, "There are three nice gentlemen here to see you, sir." Provost Layton escorts Mac and his two bodyguards into Dean Grimsby's office and tells them to have a seat. Closing the door, the provost heads back to her office. Mac asks Dean Grimsby, "Do you know who I am?" Dean Grimsby replies, "No. What's this all about?" Mac replies, "Let me introduce myself. My name is Mac. These are my two bodyguards, Mad Dog and Bad Dog." Suddenly getting very worried, Dean Grimsby quietly exclaims, "What is all of this about?" Mac sits back in his seat, putting his feet up on Dean Grimsby's desk, explaining, "Let me get right to the point. I placed a bet through Bill Fusco. I'm sure the name rings a bell. I'm here to collect my money." Dean Grimsby suddenly knows what this meeting is all about. Knowing that he is in very hot water, Dean Grimsby asks, "What bet?" "You were supposed to collect through Bill." Mac explains, "I tried. He referred us to you." Trying to get out of the situation, Dean Grimsby suggests, "The best thing for you to do is to meet with Bill." Mac sits back and calmly explains, "You see, that's no longer possible, if you know what I mean. I want my $7.5 million, and I want it now." Dean Grimsby begins to sweat profusely, now knowing exactly what bet was placed, for he, himself, approved the bet and set the odds. Wiping the sweat from his face with his handkerchief, Dean Grimsby proposes, "It will take some time to obtain that much cash. Is it possible that you come back in a few days?" Mac replies, "No." Dean Grimsby exclaims in a whisper, "I can't get that much cash right now. It's going to take some time." Mac replies, "You see, you don't have any time. I said, I want my money now." Under enormous pressure, Dean Grimsby replies, "Let me make a call." Mac shakes his head and replies, "No. You see, I'm running this meeting, and we're doing things my way." For effect, Mac snaps his fingers and points to Dean Grimsby's phone. Mad Dog rips the phone cord out of the wall and destroys the dean's telephone, making sure Dean Grimsby has no communication with the outside world. Dean Grimsby is now extremely worried. Mac explains, "You see, I'm going to give you two choices. The first is you take us to the boss man. The second is you end up like Bill." Bill Fusco is sitting in a jail cell, but Dean Grimsby errantly came to the conclusion that Bill is dead. Mac asks, "Which will it be?" Not having much choice, Dean Grimsby, with a quivering voice, replies, "Okay. I'll tell you where the boss lives." Mac explains, "No. You misunderstood me. You're taking me to him right now. Or you can end up like Bill." Dean Grimsby writes a note on a piece of paper as he tells Mac, "Okay, okay." Not caring about what the dean is writing, Mac tells the dean, "And I don't have all day to listen to your nonsense. So, let's get going. Now?" Mac snaps his fingers again, prompting Mad Dog and Bad Dog to stand up. Mac tells Dean Grimsby, who remains seated, "I said, let's get going. We're going for a drive." Very reluctantly, Dean Grimsby stands up, having no choice in the matter. Figuring that he will escape on the way, the dean plans his getaway. Already expecting Dean Grimsby to pull such a stunt, Mac tells the dean, "And don't try to pull any funny stuff. If you do, remember, you'll end up just like Bill Fusco." Mac leads the way, followed by Dean Grimsby. Walking closely behind Dean Grimsby on either side is Mad Dog and Bad Dog, who will prevent the Dean from escaping should he be daring enough to try. Provost Layton, in the hallway speaking with the secretary, watches as Mac escorts Dean Grimsby down the hall. As Dean Grimsby is escorted past Provost Layton, the Provost reminds the Dean, Addison, please remember to be back in time for our meeting at 2 o'clock. With a very worried look on his face, Dean Grimsby replies, sure. I'll be there, as he slyly tosses a note on the secretary's desk, which reads, call the police. Provost Layton, however, knows the Dean is never returning. Dean Grimsby, on the other hand, is sure he'll make it back in time for the meeting. Once Mac escorts the Dean farther down the hall, the secretary shows Provost Layton the note. Provost Layton tells the secretary, go ahead and call right now. They'll know what it's all about. The secretary calls the police, as Provost Layton knows she is giving Officer Braden the opportunity to say goodbye to Dean Grimsby. Once the secretary hangs up, Provost Layton explains to the secretary what has happened and instructs her to call the campus police and have Dean Grimsby's office cleaned out. Anything found in Dean Grimsby's office may constitute evidence against him and must be handled properly. Leaving the building, Mac sees Officer Braden approaching the door. For effect, Mac abruptly stops, turns around, and opening his leather vest, exposes his gun so Dean Grimsby can get a good look at it. Mac tells Dean Grimsby, I told you, no funny stuff. I'd hate for this to get messy, if you know what I mean. Dean Grimsby starts sweating, knowing that Mac means business. But Mac knows that Officer Braden knows exactly what is going on. Approaching Dean Grimsby, Officer Braden asks the Dean, did you have someone call us? Dean Grimsby coughs and replies, no, no. Everything's fine. It's been taken care of. Knowing that Dean Grimsby is now in police custody, Officer Braden tells the Dean, you don't look too good. You might want to see a doctor. I'm gonna go inside and check everything out anyway. Have a nice day. Officer Braden walks inside as Dean Grimsby is escorted to a black limousine where he will guide Mac's driver to the ringleader. Watching as Dean Grimsby is taken away, Mr. Fraser tells Officer Hayes, this is like it's right out of a movie. Officer Hayes replies, the rest of Grimsby's afternoon will be like that too. While Dean Grimsby is being taken away, Kathy and Paula head to Admissions Director Rosenberg's office. Arriving at the top floor of the administration building, Kathy asks the secretary, by any chance, is Mr. Rosenberg available? Recognizing Kathy from her previous meetings with Provost Layton and Dean Grimsby, the secretary replies, let me check. As the secretary phones Mr. Rosenberg, Kathy whispers to Paula, school's almost out. We should have heard something by now. The secretary informs Kathy and Paula, he'll be right out. You can have a seat, if you'd like. In a few minutes, Mr. Rosenberg comes out to greet Kathy and Paula, telling them, good morning. It's good to see you again. Please come on back. Paula tells Mr. Rosenberg, I've seen you at a lot of the track meets. Mr. Rosenberg replies, I try to come out and support all of our teams whenever I get the chance. Kathy and Paula follow Mr. Rosenberg to his office, where they have a seat. Mr. Rosenberg asks, so, how can I help our star athletes today? Kathy explains, we applied to graduate school, but we haven't heard anything yet. So, we were wondering if we got accepted. Mr. Rosenberg tells Kathy and Paula, let me find out the status of your applications. I think I know what's going on, but let me check. I'll be right back. While Mr. Rosenberg is away, Kathy and Paula discuss what Mr. Rosenberg said, wondering whether good or bad news is on the way. Mr. Rosenberg returns and explains to Kathy and Paula, to be honest, we have been overwhelmed with applications to our exercise science and related programs. Hundreds of applicants have a serious interest in running track at our university. I'm sure you both are aware that, because of the overwhelming success of the track team in the past year, many high school athletes are suddenly interested in attending our university. And we've also had a lot of last-minute requests for transfers. Kathy comments, "Wow. That sounds like a good problem to have." Mr. Rosenberg informs Kathy, "Next year, Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, and both of you will be reviewing the applicants' credentials as far as their performance on the track goes. Then, you will be helping to assign the events, and with the training next year. And, I suspect you will be attending the high school state invitational meets to scout out new talent for the university." Paula asks, "Did I miss something here?" Mr. Rosenberg continues, "Oh, I'm sorry. It's my fault. I put the cart before the horse. You both have been accepted to the master's program." Kathy gives Paula a high five, telling Mr. Rosenberg, "Thank you. Thank you so much." Mr. Rosenberg continues, "Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton also want to hire you both as assistant coaches and team scouts. Your letter of acceptance was due to go out this week." Kathy tells Mr. Rosenberg, "That sounds really awesome. Thank you very much." Mr. Rosenberg adds, "Provost Layton tells me that you both have been very instrumental in the team's success this year, both on a personal level and by bringing exceptional talent to the team." Kathy and Paula talk a while longer with Mr. Rosenberg, but then have to go to class. Later that day, after class, Kathy runs into Angela Meadows, who works at the campus radio station. Opening the conversation, Kathy tells Angela, "Hey, remember me?" Angela, clearly remembering Kathy, replies, "Yeah. You're our new DJ. And your husband is our new tower guy." Kathy replies, "That would be me." Kathy and Angela catch up for a few minutes, when Angela again thanks Kathy for setting up a few interviews in the past with several track team members. Kathy smiles and tells Angela, "By the way, I got something new for you." Angela asks, "What's that?" Kathy tells her, "Let's get out of the crowd first." Angela now suspects that Kathy has something really good for her. Kathy and Angela walk to the side of a classroom building where they can have some privacy. Angela has no idea of the scope of what she is about to hear. Angela asks, "So, you mentioned you have something for me. What's up?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. Get this. Dean Grimsby got arrested this morning." Quite startled, Angela exclaims, "What? Are you serious?" Kathy replies, "Totally serious. 3 undercover officers took him away this morning." Angela replies, "Wow. Tell me all about it." Kathy explains to Angela all about Dean Grimsby's involvement with the organized gambling ring, and that he was the odds maker. Angela is floored with the information that she is hearing from Kathy. Angela tells Kathy, "This is some really good stuff. Will you be willing to do an interview about this with me?" Kathy replies, "Sure. But I have someone better who could probably do the interview with you." Angela asks, "Who's that?" Kathy replies, "Axel Braden. He's on the track team, and he's also a campus police officer. I just talked with him." Angela exclaims, "Yeah. Braden's kick-ass June buggy. So, that's who owns that one." Kathy replies, "That's the guy." Kathy tells Angela, "And Braden is our best 440 guy on the track team." Shocked at what she is hearing, Angela exclaims again, "Wow. This is really big news." Angela tells Kathy, "The bad part about this is that it's finals week next week. And everyone will be busy studying. And over the summer, this campus is dead. I'm wondering whether we should do this in the fall when we all get back." Kathy explains, "Braden will be here all summer. If you want, you can do it then. But this just happened today, so I'm sure more information will be coming along soon." Angela asks, I wonder if I can get anything out of the administration. Kathy points out, when they arrested Dr. Paxton, the administration's official statement was that he is on administrative leave. I'm sure that's going to be their official position with Dean Grimsby too. Angela sighs and replies, yeah. You're right. They are not going to say anything. Angela then asks, who is Dr. Paxton? Kathy replies, he was the distance coach for the track team. He was distributing performance-enhancing drugs and was involved in the gambling ring. Angela exclaims, wow. This is really getting interesting. This could really be big. Kathy tells Angela, it doesn't stop there. Some of the team members were suspected of fixing the events by running erratic times and bungling handoffs. Angela exclaims, seriously. This is some really big stuff. With the 10-minute break between classes now long over, Angela has to get to class. Angela tells Kathy, hey. I am going to go hunt down Axel Braden. Cover my shift for me at the radio station. Kathy laughs, telling Angela, I'm not falling for that one again. Angela laughs along with Kathy as they head to class. At the end of the academic year, the university finds itself with a highly competitive track team and two new coaches who intend to make it even better next year. Provost Layton, back in the track circle, is as happy as she can be seeing her son, Daryl Stone, running highly competitive times. The university is down one dean, which doesn't seem to bother anyone in the administration. The position of Dean of Students is now open, which Provost Layton hopes to fill by autumn. With the gambling investigation reopened after Mr. Crum's trial, Officer Hayes has busted it wide open. And over at the high school, Barbara continues in Mr. Fraser's footsteps, having a superb season.